Miss being there, I really wish I could have come out there to meet everyone in person. Thank you so much for allowing me to still connect with the community remotely. The RPG Research Project is a community portal. Everyone is welcome to join and participate. Essay, slides, and videos related to this presentation are at rpgresearch.com/LG-TSU. We'll have brief background information and some brief example program plans from Therapeutic Recreation, TR, Recreation Therapy, RT, using regular and adapted role-playing games in all formats. Example program plans will be illustrated. My previous background before going into Therapeutic Recreation was as a CTO and CIO in computer science and information technology industries. I was published by the SANS Institute. Registered with the Washington State Department of Health as a recreation therapist, currently a senior undergrad at Eastern Washington University working on an interdisciplinary degree in recreation therapy, music therapy, research psychology, and neuroscience, and there's a quick list here of related facilities, organizations, and memberships I've worked with. Community website, my LLC for services, and contact information, rpgresearch.com/contact. Been a role-playing gamer since 1979. So, regarding program plans that are more cooperative in nature, Stumbo and Peterson's Therapeutic Recreation Program Design Principles and Procedures state that it is overwhelmingly important to provide programs that emphasize the Abaddon intra-group interaction patterns, especially with such an overabundance of TR solo and competitive programs and a lack of truly cooperative activities. It's important for many, especially children. Game theory refers to this cooperative role-playing gaming as a non-zero-sum game. Participants are able to experience overcoming challenges and achieving success without it being at the cost of fellow players. Professor DiTillo's book from 2011, Facilitation Techniques in Therapeutic Recreation, maps very well between TR and role-playing games, especially the chapters on adventure therapy for all RPG formats and expressive arts as therapeutic media for LARP and therapeutic use of play for tabletop. And in that book, his theories further reinforce how role-playing games fit so well with the concept of literal exploration as the foundation of learning, and how role-playing games are so strongly associated with self-determination, autonomy, competence, and social connection to increase the learning effects. Ironically, it was the detractors' claims and subsequent successes in banning role-playing games that led to the beginnings of research on role-playing games and gamers. The popular media, individuals, and various organizations such as Patricia Pulling's Bothered About Dungeons & Dragons claimed the dangers of role-playing games, which led to a number of bans and still has an effect. However, research found either neutral or opposite indicating results to those claims. Using online lists and the Eastern Washington University Library database searches in 2008, I found only about 60 studies on the psychological relationships between role-playing games and gamers, though I have been observing increasing momentum in recent years. Some of these examples include rapidly developing foreign language skills, mathematics, creative thinking, cooperative play, problem-solving, and social skills, improved child behavior and attitudes, and catharsis. Also, development of many other skills as well as potentially significant therapeutic benefits. The suicide rate of tabletop role-playing gamers 1/8 or less that of non-gamers for the equivalent peer group, and use of role-playing games in the self-treatment of clinical depression, lower levels of meaninglessness and alienation, and indications that gamers are lower in criminal tendencies than the rest of the population. So, running through the formats quickly, because we have limited time here, the Choose Your Own Adventure books are accessible to a wide population, have a flexible time commitment, are well-structured and reusable, very inexpensive, and the easiest learning curve for a therapeutic recreation specialist or other care providers without prior RPG experiences. However, it's not social, unless it's modified, rigidly structured, doesn't allow flexibility outside of the if-then design, doesn't really allow for character development, requires for matching language abilities and cultural cohort considerations between the client and the book, and requires reading skills unless someone's there to read it for them. Now, the tabletop format is an inherently social activity, generally cooperative gameplay. Research further enforces that fantasy role-playing gamers have higher empathy scores than non-gamers. It's accessible to a wide range of populations and generally inexpensive initial investment for long-term reusability of equipment. Creativity and unlimited flexibility choices are available for many genres and systems, and it's easy to find players in small cities or larger, and easy to find locations to play. Participating in this also tends to trigger interest in peripheral subjects such as history, literature, cartography, painting, terrain building, map drawing, etc. However, some of the cons, generally it's not at all physically active and can be difficult to find players and groups in smaller towns, with some locations having ongoing societal stigma and even outright hostility, especially in more rural communities. Many facilities are not wheelchair friendly, are noisy, dirty, too hot, too cold, or otherwise uncomfortable. Without an experienced and skilled game master and therapeutic recreation specialist running the game, if participants are lacking in social skills, such as with the autism spectrum, games can rapidly break down and lead to group dissolution. Tabletop role-playing games also have the steepest learning curve for a care provider lacking prior role-playing game experience, which can take weeks, months, or even years to develop, but this can be addressed through collaboration with TR and non-TR trained game masters, similar to the ROMOC program in Israel, which I have detailed on the website. One of the most critical considerations for those considering computer-based role-playing games for treatment is real-time versus turn-based. Clients with significant physical and/or cognitive impairments will be much better served with turn-based computer role-playing games that wait indefinitely for user input compared to real-time games that rely on coordination, reflexes, and fast cognitive processing speeds. The aggregate of research indicating healthy screen time is around 1 to 2 hours per day. Now, there are caveats related to social and empathetic skills, but there are exceptions illustrated in, for example, recently in NPR Science Friday, How Games Move Us, 2016, games that specifically work on evoking emotion, compassion, and empathy, such as Life is Strange and That Dragon, Cancer. My personal experiences compared to tabletop and LARP, computers leave a little something lacking, but it's still significantly valuable for the right clients. Many therapeutic recreation specialists think that any screen time is bad, but some are okay with the Wii because it gets them up and moving. So some of the pros. Many styles and genres available. It's now more cultural. Accepted. Some are useful for social skills and trial by error learning. Online versions can join with existing friends and family and provide a means of making new friends online, especially helpful for those that are severely physically restricted, allowing connection with the world when they would otherwise be socially isolated. Also for those with social phobias, they can slowly increase social connections behind the safety of the screen. It's easy to find others to game with online. There are many adaptive interfaces available for those with disabilities, as will be illustrated later in the brain injury program example. The more physically interactive interfaces such as the Wii can provide physical activity, and the training curve for care providers is relatively low. On the negative side, the majority are not physically active. Research shows higher levels of obesity. Most offline versions do not help with social skill development that can be detrimental to empathy, though there are exceptions. The online communities can be poor social experiences. There's potential issues regarding violent games, interfaces, and traits having an influence on that. There are more limited choices in creativity than tabletop or LARP can be a problem with poor communication skills. And also companies build in much grinding and hooking, reinforcing the addictive-like behavior patterns by design, and there can be expensive upfront and recurring costs and obsolescence. However, there is research showing that about 1 to 2 hours a day can actually be beneficial and lead to a number of benefits. The LARP format. TR professionals have extensive training in managing groups and the many dynamics that occur in group challenges under pressure. So this is another area where as yet untapped, potentially strong synergistic relationships could be developed between this professional community and the LARP community. The pros include variable physicality, flexibility for a wide range of populations, encourages variance of teamwork, strongly encourages creativity and problem solving, verbal and other communication skills, social skills, neural mapping with objects in the world, many ancillary interests like painting, music, costume design, and manufacturer, the list goes on. On the negative side, it's more often competitive in nature, though that certainly varies. The more combat-centered LARPs require athletic prowess rather than character abstraction of their abilities beyond the player's normal limitations, which can exclude many with significant physical or cognitive disabilities. Some can be somewhat expensive either in time or materials for equipment or costumes. Often, it's difficult to find LARP groups nearby. Location accommodations can be challenging and or limited by weather if outdoors, and many are not ADA or wheelchair friendly, though there is improvement in that area. There is significant ongoing social stigma and downright hostility in many locations, more than all the other formats of RPG, partly because of the visibility. The learning curve for care providers without prior RPG experience is steep compared to computer-based or solo RPGs, though with some entry-level and rules-light LARP systems it can be more accessible, and it is less steep than the typical tabletop role-playing game. Some example program plans I'm going to illustrate briefly. My general observations of ASD-PDD populations when participating in well-run tabletop and LARP generally leads to reduction of stereotyped behaviors such as fixation, distraction, hand flapping, isolation, lack of response or interaction to or with others, and leads to improvements in social interaction, cooperative play, communication, affect, self-confidence, etc. While competitive game losses reduce their confidence, so it's important to avoid the competitive ones. The key overall is structure, balance, and guidance. With little to no modification necessary to either LARP or tabletop for this population, they can benefit significantly. Computer-based and choose-your-own adventures need more supervision to limit hyper-focus. An example of a tabletop version to learn civic resources. In a 1940s noir setting, participants work together, access and use civic resources such as police, fire department, doctor's office, hospital, theater, community center, etc. Another example is a tabletop that also switches to LARP for autism youth and adults for them to learn to use the transit system. Participants build confidence and competence toward improved autonomy through use of the public transit system. It begins by using tabletop for phase one with actual maps of the city bus system and schedule, and then the LARP actually uses the buses in the final phase for phase two. For autism spectrum toddlers and adapted LARP, this was an actual implemented trial at Eastern Washington University with autism spectrum toddlers, 2.5 to 5-year-olds, and their neurologically normal peer group. There was an immediate reduction in stereotyped behaviors during the activity. Using a LARP basis, we had much higher success rate. All but one participant completed all tasks successfully and all maintained attention and focus for a full duration of 15-minute session rotation. Compare that to the average of only 5 minutes for all of the non-LARP programs going on concurrently. Just a quick pointer on role-playing games for the deaf and hard of hearing community. It's a social activity for deaf participants to help reduce the significant problems with isolation and encourage interaction through tabletop and LARP using American Sign Language. Other than sign language, it's mostly the same. It's just making sure to help break down the issues with isolation. The above programs can all be also used with at-risk and troubled youth, specifically, for example, substance abuse recovery and transition plan. Using tabletop and LARP provide other forms of diversionary activities other than substance abuse or abuse, or the associated destructive violent theft and high-risk activities. If participants require higher stimulus activities, then participation in combat-based LARP is a good outlet for such energy. Transition plan includes local gaming groups and a hobby store to help them separate from drug culture peer group that they would otherwise automatically return to as their only recreational activity. Using more pegs to tabletop for social phobias. During a 1-year informal research project, I started 12 new groups, and 2 participants in 2 separate groups were struggling with severe social phobias. They had first started with more pegs online multiplayer games, and had emailed me saying they wanted to try a more social connection, but in a safe setting, and they'd heard that my groups were a safe environment, so they each joined a group. They reported significantly decreasing anxiety levels in the groups over time. This next quick summary uses all 4 formats of role-playing games for the recovery of a brain injury participant. There's a detailed video presentation just on this section alone that's a little less than half an hour, and all the supporting documents at rpgresearch.com/brain injury. Stage 1 uses Choose Your Own Adventure as a modality. In an early stage recovery from coma, for example, Ranchos Los Amigos Stage 2, the recreation therapist would engage in a binary dialogue, asking for yes or no simple answers to questions, such as squeeze or a hand or blink once or for yes, two for no, and walk them through the Choose Your Own Adventure process. This should help with measurable improvements in activating neuroplasticity in areas of basic cognition, social interaction, simple to moderate problem solving, and speech comprehension. In stage 2, as the participant's gaining visual function and some mechanical functioning, using a mouse or a Wiimote or an adaptive interface to participate in offline, turn-based, computer-based role-playing game to help aid in further neuroplasticity-related improvements in general cognition, problem-solving, audio and or visual language comprehension, gross motor functions, and limited fine motor functions. Here are a number of different adaptive interfaces available for computer interface role-playing games. Stage 3 would be implementing a tabletop role-playing game modality. Some assistance is necessary from other participants to be patient and assist as needed when the client has trouble communicating correct word or intention verbally. This part of the exercise is to pick up and roll dice, manipulate, read, and calculate those dice rolls and simple character variable calculations, comprehend letters, rulebooks, dialogue, and mildly complex scenario puzzles. Help them with writing on paper with pencil. They may need palm art or other adaptive grips. Engage in adventure dialogue between the game master and other players. For stage 4 in the recovery process, a LARP modality would be recommended. In planning, we'll need to be a LARP program and group that allows for the client's disabilities, and in implementing, the client initially participates in a controlled clinical setting with other quote-unquote LARPers. Then over time, the client may be able to participate in LARP activities outside of a clinical setting. These are some actual modified wheelchairs for those interested in LARP activities. And this is from the movie Knights of Badassdom, which was actually filmed here in Spokane. That chariot is a wheelchair. So through the use of this 4-stage program, potential recovery in many areas is possible using role-playing games in 4 different modalities. And because these activities match the client's leisure interests well, it's more likely the client will continue engaging in the activity after discharge, which will have a better prognosis for long-term recovery. Quick note, a mobile facility being built, it's wheelchair-friendly to provide all 4 formats of role-playing gaming 2 different facilities around the country. So, quick summary. There's strong correlative research disproving the negative stereotypes, many indicators of advantages over non-gamers for those who are gamers, regular and adaptive RPGs useful for therapeutic recreation specialists. It's affordable most for the most part, useful for a wide range of populations, flexible for adaptation to specific client needs, has intrinsic interest for many. Just pick the right genres to match their interests as indicated on a leisure interests questionnaire form. They're more likely to engage in ongoing participation after discharge, but there needs to be more and stronger causal research. Thank you very much for your time. Again, wish I could be there. Hope you're having a wonderful time. And feel free to contact me anytime by email. That's the best way. And I will gladly answer any questions and assist anybody who wants to implement programs in their area. Thank you, and happy gaming.